Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play Stores.
Inshallah United. I've been looking forward to this all week. A story of faith and football for every Manx religion. Manchester, birthplace of industry. The Stone Roses, the class of 92. And even more momentously, in 1978, a small brown man called Noz. This is a story of how and why he became to become a strictly halal Stretford Ender. You had me at the beginning. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, Nuruddin Chowdhury. Should we call you the Noz, or we'll call you Noz? Morning to you, Noz.
Hey, yeah, how's it going?
Yeah, you know, another day in Marbella. It could be worse. Congratulations on the book. It made, honestly, as soon as I saw this, I started laughing out loud. I don't think I've finished since. So, I mean,
thank you so much.
My pleasure is all mine. So where do we, I mean, 78, Margaret Thatcher's just about to take over the country. We've got uproar in Iran. Also, Sid Vicious is about to shuffle off to that great punk gig in the sky. And you appear on an unsuspecting Manchester.
That's it. And can I just stress from the beginning that it's me who called myself a little brown man. It wasn't you.
Yes, exactly. Well, my name is Charles Brown, so I'm a little brown man at the best of times. So don't worry about that. Yeah.
But no, it's I mean, so much of the book is about that accident of birth, because so much of who I am and how I was brought up and all my cultural reference points, like football, music, and everything. So much of it is intrinsically Mancunian. Whereas if my parents had settled in Liverpool or London or maybe even like Canada or wherever, I'd have a whole different set of influences. And that's kind of what I explore, because I find that mad. I find the fact that my parents could easily have settled in, I don't know, Brixton. And then I might, well, So many United fans from London that maybe I still would have been a United fan, but still.
You could have gone to Toronto and become an ice hockey fan, for example.
That's it. Or I could have settled in a rugby town and wore sort of red trousers.
We don't call them Brexit. We call them Brexit trousers. But anyway, yeah.
I know what you mean
on that one. So when did you're born in 1978? Okay, so you kind of missed the Coppell era and all that sort of thing. But you are right in the centre of a Manchester kind of thing, aren't you? You got that whole brilliant Hacienda. You've got the Stone Roses, because there's an Ian Brown quote on the front which made me laugh my proverbials off, and it really was it really was the place to be. And of course, you've got some, not the same team, but they do happen to be the Gallagher brothers sort of rock up on the scene as well. So it is for a shining moment, and it still is, Manchester is the centre of the universe.
Well, that's it. It's so much about that. And again, there's people say to me, oh, how do you feel about City, Man City being so good now? Or how do you feel about Liverpool being so good now? And really, like, I genuinely feel so lucky that at that point when I was growing up, when I cared most about football, and obviously it was my formative years, that I got to see the best football, the best club. And like you say, Manchester was such a happening place. You had so much great music. You're no better than me. Like, we could reel off so many great Manchester bands from 10cc up to like Black Grape and New Order and Oasis and everything. So it's such a vibrant city. And again, it's that thing of, do you know that whole nature versus nurture thing of like, am I who I am because I was born in Manchester, or would I have always been the same person? And I genuinely think so much of it is where you end up sort of being brought up, because I can't imagine being the same person if I lived anywhere else. Simply because like there's so many different cultural references and even little things like the rivalry between Liverpool and Manchester. We're not far apart in the grand scheme of things. Like, it's very, very close.
As you said that, there are literally thousands of Liverpudlians throwing stuff at the wireless. Trust me on this one.
But that's
not
the thing.
Not that far apart. I mean, that's no. Fighting talk for a Thursday morning.
No, I mean, like, purely geographically, it's not so far. But one thing I love about this country is the fact that you can be literal sort of like a stone's throw away and you've got that local rivalry. And it can even in Manchester, it can be North Manchester versus South Manchester.
It can be Oldham, for example. I mean, everybody exactly. Forgets about Oldham. And I mean, that, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's the thing. And another funny thing is, and again, like with football rivalry, is sometimes you get rivalries that you didn't even know existed. So we think of, as United fans, we think of Leeds and City and Liverpool, obviously, and maybe even Arsenal's being like our main rivals.
Let's face it, everybody's got a problem with Leeds. Let's face it. I mean, come on, let's be honest here.
But you'll have a situation where Bolton fans think they're massive rivals with United, and we're like, are we?
It's the Wigan Ultras.
It is. Where are you from, by the way?
I was born in Stoke-on-Trent.
Oh wow! So you'd be Port Vale.
Would I hell? Anyway, but yeah. But I grew up on the King's Road in Chelsea. So that'll tell you. Right. So you know exactly. But yes. Right. Now let's cut to the. And I support Malaga, by the way, down here. I'm not a Barcelona or a Real Madrid fan. Let's cut to the chase. There are some serious issues here. I'm not saying this is a serious social, economic, and racial book, but isn't it something that people think, oh, well, there's a stereotype, probably by the people wearing those red trousers you're talking about, that say, oh, well, you know, all football fans and, you know, you come, as you said before, you're a diehard halal Stretford Ender. And there's this horrible stereotype, isn't it, that, oh, well, they don't really get football because they're all cricket. And it's just, you just want to throw things at your TV or at your radio when people say that.
Well, that's it. And the funny thing, I mean, first of all, in terms of football and religion, I don't see them as separate things. Like, it's just intertwined for me. Like, in the same way I would pray for world peace, I would also pray that United signed Roberto Baggio. It's that kind of thing. But also, it's funny because especially when I was growing up, I mean, it changed slightly in the 90s, but in the same way people had particular prejudices about Asians or Muslims, especially in the 80s, people had prejudices about football fans as well, about how they were all thugs, how basically you could treat them like second class citizens. And one thing I found, and it kind of relates to both, is so growing up as a young Asian lad, as a Muslim lad, parents from Pakistan, you desperately want to fit in. And I think that's true of anyone who's a teenager, really, but especially sort of if you're slightly different. And one thing about football that I always found is you forget the stereotype about thugs or whatever, or aggression, or whatever. I felt so welcomed as a football fan. And to me, that was an immediate family where if I said I was a United fan, suddenly I had an immediate kinship with a whole lot of people. And they welcomed me in. There wasn't anything about like, oh, you're Asian or you're Muslim. It was just like, you're a Red. Mm. And it's also that thing of like, and you'll absolutely understand it, is that it's such a social lubricant abroad as well, because you can go anywhere. As soon as you mention something like football or music, you mention your favourite band or you mention who you support, suddenly there's a conversation going.
This isn't about me, but about 12 years ago, I was in the Sahara. I was in the desert doing this, that, and the other. And I came out on the edge of the Sahara, there's a Moroccan village called Mohammed. And I was with my mate Kevin, morning Kevin, who's a blue, so you'll really get on with him. And we walked into the one, it was like a coffee house or a tea house, and there was a TV in the corner and it was showing a Man United match, and this place is literally the last town on the edge of the Sahara, and there are guys watching Man U shirts, so you can say George Best, Bobby Charlton, David Beckham, people will absolutely know straight off.
Well, that's absolutely it, and that's what I find amazing. And it's the same with music, like it's you can be in South America, you can be in Argentina or Brazil, and you mention like the band Queen or you mention the Rolling Stones, and suddenly you've got this automatic connection with them, and they know you to some extent. And obviously for me growing up, you talk about Oasis being City fans. They were such a big deal in the 90s. And the funny thing is now you get people saying, oh, Oasis were never that good, or Oasis sort of just copying the Beatles, or Oasis are overrated. My opinion about Oasis is you can think what you like about them. I happen to love them. But if you weren't there, if you didn't experience it, you won't know.
I was lucky enough to be in the UK at that time, and the build up to the Nebworth shows. I mean, it was that, and everybody, I was based down in London, so you had the Blur fans as well, but Oasis was a band that spoke to everybody who wasn't really in London. Oasis was a band for guys from, and you know, guys and girls from wherever you were from working class towns, in the same way that the Jam had done literally sort of 20 years before. They gave a voice for the working class kids or the kids who felt alienated, but not so much in a Smiths way, another Manchester band, but you see what I mean? It was that huge excitement, and you had Loaded Magazine, we had Euro 96, and I'm not saying it was better then, but my goodness, that was that whole Britpop wave, which sort of, and it crescendoed, if you like, and broke, for those frantic sort of 3 minutes in Barcelona in 99.
Well, that's it, yeah, and that's, funnily enough, that's where the book kind of ends. That's the sort of finale of it. But it's absolutely that thing of, I think in the '90s it was the first time where it was kind of like okay to totally embrace being English and British and everything, because before then, I think people forget that, like, before Britpop had like Union Jacks on guitars and stuff like that, it was still seen as belonging to sort of an unpleasant element, and you didn't sort of wave that flag, and Britpop changed all that, and also like there was a movement in art, in music, in sport, even politics felt like it was changing slightly. There was so much happening, and again, it's that thing of being there. Like, you will know, like, going to, in terms of Oasis, whether they are musically whatever, if you think they were really reductive or groundbreaking, the feeling that they gave people at that point, You can't measure that.
Yeah, I watched Supersonic a while, about 3 or 4 months ago. I hadn't seen it, and I was looking after a friend's house, and I was like, oh, check this one out, and it just took me back, and just reminded me of the moments. But look, you know, you're saying this whole thing about praying five times a day. Again, we're going back to the stereotypes. Any more of the family? I mean, was this a black sheep? Oh my goodness, not as into football. There'll be no saving his eternal soul, etc. I mean, was it a bend it like Beckham moment? Another 90s film that puts football on the map. You know, I would say that Italia 90 was what changed football. because suddenly it's okay. You know, Gaz's tears, Ness and Dormer, Des Lynam doing his thing. And that made football accessible to the what we'd call the literati now, the chattering classes. And suddenly it was okay to like football because you weren't going to get glassed away in the San Siro.
Yeah, no, it totally blew up into the mainstream. And the thing is, there wasn't any sort of problem with me being a football fan or getting into football. It was more like, from my parents' point of view, they were just slightly baffled. Like they because they didn't grow up in that football culture, they were like, why does it, it's a sport, why does it matter that much to you? Why is it all encompassing? But the funny thing is that there's a whole chapter in the book that's about my older sister, and she was into football as well. And she really, in a lot of ways, helped sort of fuel that passion. And the funny thing is, and again, it's kind of apt we're talking on the radio here, is that first season in 93 when Man United won the league for the first time in years and years and years.
You don't win nothing with kids, etc.
Exactly. But it was, I experienced so much of that season on the radio. And I think, in a funny way, that was such an amazing way to experience it, because there's something about the intimacy of radio. And again, I think the UK has got some amazing broadcasters that it takes you there and it sort of takes you along in a way that nothing else does. And I think I prefer the commentary on the radio to the TV because it's so evocative and it sort of paints such amazing pictures.
And of course, I'm just thinking about commentators. I'm just thinking about Robbie Savage. He was famous. He was a member of that. Here's the thing, because if you don't, people talk about a disconnect between fans and the players. I mean, when you were seeing them, when you went to the Stretford End, because Giggs, Keane, I mean, a force of bleeding nature. I mean, Keane, Beckham, of course, this is when Beckham, he was everywhere. I mean, in such a way with Posh and Becks, etc. But Scholes, just the whole, the whole nine, Schmeichel. And I'm not a Red, but those in that it was a legendary, it was legendary players. Was the connect between yourselves and the guys on the pitch? Because people say, oh, they're millionaires and they're getting the Bentleys and they're getting new tattoos and off they go.
Well, yeah, and don't get me wrong, it's very easy for like the likes of you and I with the odd grey hair in our beards I'm not done that, but it's very easy for us to say, oh, it was better in the old days, but it was definitely different and it was definitely more intimate, because the perfect example for me is the training grounds. So in the old days when I was growing up, United used to train in Salford and it was called the Cliff. And you could literally sit on a grass verge and watch them train. Whereas now they've moved to Carrington in Cheshire and it's all guarded. You can't get anywhere near the complex. But that's just one example of how it's gone from really intimate and feeling as if you're part of it to it being so far removed from the fans.
Yeah, but that is, just look at the recent World Cup.
You can understand,
No, not only that, but just look at the way it's going. I mean, everything's going corporate now and you've only got to look at some of the decisions they made. Not only Qatar, but I always laugh because when, with the Europa Cup final, when they played it Azerbaijan, and it took you 4 days on a pack mule to get there, and so they had sort of locals holding sort of, I don't know, Chelsea scarves the wrong way up because they had absolutely no idea. But there is a disconnect. What are you hoping to get across with the story of faith and football?
In one sense, it's just me telling my story and what it was like at that time growing up. But on a greater sort of level, what I hope will come across is, and again, in sort of the current sort of news cycle and the way people talk about the world, there's a lot of otherism about Muslims and about, oh, they are different from us. They have a different lifestyle from us. The funny thing is that so much of the prejudice comes from people who don't actually know Muslims in their day-to-day lives. They just hear about what they've read in certain sort of news outlets. So what I'd hope is people read this book and realize that, I'm proudly Muslim. It's not as if I'm a lapsed Muslim or anything. I'm a proud Muslim, but I want people to realize, like, we're just normal. Like, we're just like you. Like, it's not, there's no difference.
You don't want to be like me. Trust me on this one, Noz. But it's a good point, because, you know, we've got people like Riz Ahmed who are doing Hollywood blockbusters, one thing. And anybody out there who hasn't seen The Long Goodbye, it'll take 11 minutes. Yeah, thank you. 11 minutes of your time. And absolutely, not only for the thing, but the speech at the end is absolutely, does it as a rap as well at some points. I mean, that is. Yeah. Dynamite. But again, it's that, you know, it's the British experience, you know.
But that's it. And again, it's that thing of, you get prejudices of all kinds. So you will even get prejudices of sort of people from England or UK abroad, of like, this is what they like, this is what we've seen on TV. And then people meet you as individuals and they think, well, actually, they really sound lovely people, and we get on. And that's the thing. I think most prejudices occur when people don't actually meet the people that they're against, and have just read second, third hand reports.
Three words: no go areas. People say there's no go areas.
It does my head in. It absolutely does my head in, because I'm like, what does that even mean? Does that mean like you get your passport checked, or you sort of like
somebody goes to the top of the minaret and you all come streaming out? Well, you know, you all come streaming out. If it's not you guys coming streaming out of the mosque, it's the guys coming out of the Chinese shops with machetes. I mean, it's a well-known fact, mate, I tell you.
It's ridiculous. And again, the most sort of fervent reports of that kind of thing you'll get is these right-wing sort of American shows sort of saying, oh, there's this part of Birmingham that you can go in. And, like, they've got no... They've never set foot in the place.
Oh, yeah. What do you hope that people say? And was it fun to write this, by the way? Was it a good look?
It was, but it was also mad because obviously you're writing about yourself and growing up and everything. And there's quite a few times where I had to ask, like, my brothers and sisters or certain friends, like, am I okay to include this? And like, it's so yeah,
are the family talking to you now? Is that what
that is? Oh, yeah.
That's the main thing.
Yeah, so that's still happening. But yes, but what I hope is as much as it's about sort of being Muslim and Asian and everything, and even being a United fan, I think I'd hope that anyone who picks it up and reads it can find something to relate to, because that's what it's all about.
The book is called Inshallah United, and what a chant that would be. Inshallah United, A Story of Faith or Football. It's by Nuruddin Chowdhury, or we'll call him Noz. It's going to be available as a virtual download from our own virtual bookstore. Noz, if people want to find you online, where can they, in the nicest possible way, find out where you are?
Well, I mean, my Twitter handle is probably the easiest, and it's Bearded Genius, which doesn't work because I am neither bearded nor a genius, so that doesn't work on any level. But yeah, that is me.
Okay, that's the way of finding it. The book is called Inshallah United. It's by Nuruddin Chowdhury. And you said for every man can religion. If you're scratching your head, I'm going to play up to the news, but with F-E-A-R by the great Ian Brown. The book is called Inshallah United. Noz, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. I've loved it.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.